Okay, good evening all. Welcome back to our Daf Week Shir. We are up to Yud Ches Amud Beis, the very top. There's a Mishnah, and as we mentioned last time, we thought we were going to get into this last time. Hello, Sam. We are on Yud Ches Amud Beis, the top of Yud Ches Amud Beis, so we thought we were going to get up to this last time, but we did not. And we mentioned that this Mishnah basically marks a cutoff point or a transition point from the first part of the Masechta to now the second part of the Masechta. The second part of the Masechta essentially is one in which we discuss the laws of Tumah and Tahara, and that is the entirety of all the Mishnayos that we are going to deal with, and the Gemara will follow in suit for the most part. And so let's just jump right in. So there is a bit of a, there's a bit of a stigma that the laws of Tumah and Tahara are very difficult, but nonetheless, they are different levels and different ways to approach what we're going to learn, and we're going to try to understand it on the simplest level, and so you'll follow along with me. If you have any questions, please let me know, but it's not as complicated or as scary as I think sometimes we make it out to be. Okay, so basically what our first Mishnah deals with over here in Yud Ches Amud Beis is that it tells us that if you needed to understand anything about the laws of Tumah Tahara in a nutshell, it's that there are five levels of things that have different levels of sanctity. So in other words, what the Mishnah is going to outline, I'm just going to explain a little bit of this outside and then we'll do it inside, is that the most mundane level of sanctity for a food item is called chulin, right? That means you go to the store, you get a piece of bread, and it's chulin, it's regular unsanctified bread. Above that, we have Maaser Sheni, right? This is the portion that we take out it's specifically food that could be eaten by anyone, but it has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. And so that's Maaser Sheni. That's the second level of sanctity. Again, first level, Chulin is nothing. Second is Maaser Sheni. Above that is Truma. This is the portion of the crops that we give to the Kohen. Above that is Kodesh, right? So that's essentially any sort of carbon is considered Kodesh. And then finally is the Mechatas. That is the water afar, a mixture that we make up of the para aduma that we sprinkle on someone to purify them. So that is the highest level of sanctity in terms of these different holy items. Interesting to note, just that it's the only non-food item. Meaning water is a food item, but it's people are not really drinking this as far as I understand. The first four items again: chulin, maaser sheni, truma, and Kodesh, these are all edible items, and the last item is Mechatas, which is a food item, but it's not edible. Okay, so with that, let's jump right in, and we're essentially going to see that the way in which we approach each of these things is that we get more stringent as it goes up in level of sanctity, and therefore how we act around it has to increase in terms of our supervision of how we're acting as well. So let's see what the Mishnah has to say. Again, Yud Ches Amud Beis, the very top. Okay. This says the Mishnah, note in layadayim lechulin ulamayser v'latruma. First of all, you have to be aware that one is obligated to do an atilas yadayim. When they say atilas yadayim, they mean like a regular, like we do an atilas yadayim when we have our challah on Shabbos, when we have our bread during the week. So that's what we're talking about. So we rinse our hands for chulin. So again, that's the regular case. That's what we're doing every Shabbos. Every day we have bread. And for maaser sheni, we have to wash our hands. And for truma, meaning I don't eat truma. A non-Kohen cannot eat truma. But anyone who is eating truma, who is allowed to eat truma, he has to wash his hands before he eats truma. And the understanding is, again, you take a kli, you pour water on your hands, and that's how you make your hands tahor. This is also telling us that the notion of stam yadayim, right? So there, you don't know if your hands are impure or not, but you assume there's a good chance that your hands are probably impure. So therefore, we say because of the suffix, you haven't been washing your hands the whole day. You haven't been fully following them. So we say, you know, out of a suffix, you go ahead and wash your hands. Then ula kodesh matbilin, when it comes to eating sacrificial food, when it comes to eating carbonos. So here, it's only washing the hands as well, but it's not washing them with a kli. You have to go to a mikveh and dip your hands in the mikveh. And then finally, im nitmu yadav nitma gufo. If your hands became Sorry, did I meant. Sorry, I skipped the word. So again, lekodesh matpilin for the karbanos, you have to be tov with your hands in the mikvah. Ulechatas, and when it comes to the chatas, im nitmeu yadav nitma gufo. When it comes to handling the water of the mechatas, so if your hands became tame, then your entire body is essentially going to be considered tame, and therefore you have to immerse your entire body in the mikvah. If your hands did not become tame, then it's the same as a kodesh. You just have to dip your hands in the mikvah. But if you know your hands became tame, then you have to go ahead and jump in the mikvah with your entire body. Okay, that's part one of the Mishnah. Part two is, let's say I took care of purifying myself for one of the lower level items of sanctity. So, taval l'chulin huchzak l'chulin. If I was tovel, if I purified myself in order to eat chulin, and my goal and intention was to eat chulin, then I am allowed to eat chulin, but aser lemaiser, it's prohibited for me to eat maiser sheni, because the thought is that my intention of how I immersed myself is quintessential in terms of the process of immersing. Seemingly, the reason is, we can understand by implication, is that I'm going to be more careful or less careful depending on what I am immersing myself for. If I'm simply immersing myself for chulin, when the stakes are not very high, you want to be taller, but okay, it's just chulin, so you may not be as careful. So you go ahead and you're total for chulin. Maybe you made a mistake, but again, it's just chulin. So how could you eat maaser sheni? Because you weren't so careful. So therefore, we say you can't eat maaser sheni, and so on and so forth with each level. So again, tava l'chulin huchzak l'chulin. If one was total for chulin and he wanted to eat chulin, it was only for chulin. Aser l'maaser, he is then aser, prohibited to eat maaser sheni. Tava l'maaser huchzak l'maaser. If he was total for maaser sheni and he only wanted to be matahir himself for maaser sheni, then great, but aser l'truma, it's aser for him to eat truma. Tava l'truma huchzak l'truma, same again with truma, that if he was tovel for truma and he only wanted to be matahir himself for truma, aser l'kodesh, he can't eat kodesh. Tava l'kodesh huchzak l'kodesh, if he was tovel for kodesh, then he can eat the kodesh, but aser l'chatas, he cannot handle the mei chatas. So the klal, the general rule of the Mishnah, therefore, is taval lachamor mutar lakal. If one was tovel himself in a mikvah with the intention for a stricter level of sanctity, then he is going to be allowed to have an item of lesser sanctity, right? What the Mishnah did not say explicitly, but what was clear, is that if I was tovel for maaser sheni, not only can I eat maaser sheni, but I can also eat chulin. I just can't eat kodesh.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
And the last portion, though, if he washed himself for kodesh, he's prohibited from chatas, right?
Yeah.
But how could it be anything else? Because to wash himself for kodesh is just to wash the hands, whereas for washing for for chatas, you have to wash the whole body.
Okay, good. So fair question. The assumption is that we're specifically talking about someone who is being tovel in a mikvah with his whole body, I believe. And so therefore, it was a stringency to begin with from being tovel with chulin, but, and so that's the entire case, and so that's how it sort of builds by progression. But 100%, if you're talking about someone who was only simply washing his hands at the very beginning, then how could that ever work for the very next level? So it has to be that we're talking about a singular entity over here, and that is, for each of these cases, he's being tovel his whole body for whatever reason. That's what he was doing. But if your intention was for the lowest level, then you can only eat the lowest level, and so on and so forth. But if your intention was for the highest level, then you are allowed to eat the highest thing. So again, tovel l'chamor mutar l'kal. If one was tovel for something that was a more stricter level of sanctity, then he's allowed to eat that which is of a lesser level of sanctity. And tava lo huchzak, if he was tovel without any sort of an intention at all, ki'ilu lo tovel, it says basically as if he did not, it's as if he was not tovel at all. What the Gemara is going to discuss, I think we should get to it today, tonight, what the Gemara is going to discuss is trying to understand, I don't understand something. If I was tovel in a mikvah, and I had no intention, all right, I took a bath, and I went to the beach, and I took a bath in the ocean. And so now I can't eat my challah roll? Clearly, I'm pure. I didn't have the intention. Come on, I'm clearly pure over here. So the Gemara is really going to struggle with that. But that's what the Mishnah says at face value. That if I go in without any sort of intent whatsoever, then it's essentially as if I did not do any tefillah at all. And then finally, the Mishnah ends with a rule in a similar vein, but we need a little bit more background to understand. So in general, we say that there's something called Tumas Midras. Tumas Midras means that it was Tumah that was specifically passed over from one item to the next, and the reference is that you have someone who is Tummy on the level of a Nida, or Tummy on the level of a Zav, or a Zava, and they sit on something. The clothes themselves, which the transference is called Tumas Midras, so the clothes become an Av Hatuma. So the question is, what if we have clothes that are resting on top of a person who that person is sitting on those clothes, right? When you wear your pants, you're sitting on your pants. So if you have a person who is not really careful about Tumah Tahara in general, so can we trust his clothes that they can make me, if I touch them, do they have the ability to make me Tameh? And let's say I have a person who eats Maizir Sheni all the time. He lives in Yerushalayim, he eats Maizir Sheni all the time, but he never eats Kodesh. So am I allowed to assume that his clothes are not Tameh enough for me who always eats Kodesh? So that's what the Mishnah is going to deal with. Big Day Am Ha'aretz Midras LePrushin. So Prushin are people, it's a fascinating case of the Mishnah, or a fascinating phraseology, I should say, but basically Prushin are those individuals who only eat Chulin when they're in a state of tahara, meaning I don't have an obligation to be in a state of tahara when I have my chulin food. How do you know that? Because we are all in a cheskas tuma, and we eat our chulin all the time. So there was a chumrah though that some people only eat their chulin in a state of tahara, and they were specifically called the prushim, those who kind of separate themselves. I don't think it's clearly not meant to be a derogatory term, but some people who were on such a level that they separated themselves like this, so that's what we're talking about. So Big Day Am Ha'aretz Midras LePrushin. So the clothing of someone who's an Am Ha'aretz, who knows nothing about the laws of Tumah Tahara and is not really careful, so his clothes are going to be considered Tameh through Midras for Prushim. So therefore, as a Parash if you have someone who's a parish and he is always careful to be eating chulin in a state of tahara, so if he goes ahead and touches the clothes of an Am Ha'aretz, then he is therefore considered tameh misafek, and so he cannot eat the chulin before he goes in the mikvah. So to a Big Day Prushin Midras the Ochlei Truma. Let's say if someone is a very holy Jew, he only eats his chulin in a state of tahara, but he doesn't eat truma ever. So the clothing of the Prushim is considered tameh through Midras for those individuals who are eating Truma. Big Day Ochlei Truma Midras the Kodesh, and the clothing of those who eat Truma is considered Tameh through Midras for those who eat Kodesh. And Big Day Kodesh Midras the Chatas, and the clothing of those who eat Kodesh is going to be considered Tameh through Midras for those who handle the Mechatas. What is very interesting over here is that you don't have the case of Maizir Sheni. You go from Prushim, which is eating Chulin B'Tahara, to Truma, to Kodesh, to Mechatas. So I'm not really sure why that is, but the Mishnah seems to skip a case for some reason. But that's, again, following in the same understanding of things, it's just this constant recognition of what state and what level of carefulness do you have in your Tumah Tahara. And if you are careful at level 3, then the person who is a little bit higher on level 4, they have that level 4 person has to be concerned when he's around the level 3 person that he's not as careful as him, so he could potentially make me tummy, me suffix, so that I can't eat level 4 foods. That's the essential idea over here. And the Mishnah concludes with an example of this. That Yosef ben Yoezer haya chassid sheba kuhuna. So Yosef ben Yoezer, he was the most devout of all of the Kohanim in the entirety of kuhuna, and the haisa mitpachto midras the kodesh. But when he was not in a state where he was eating kodesh, and he was only in a state where he was eating truma, so his napkin, right, which even though you say you don't really sit on a napkin, so how could it become tameh through the midras tuma? So you say, whatever, every now and again, you put a napkin on a chair and you sit in it, so therefore it could become tummy through midras. his napkin would be considered tameh through midrash for those who ate kodesh, even though Yosef ben Yoezer was such a holy kohen, since he was not always eating kodesh. If I was an individual who was eating kodesh, and Yosef ben Yoezer was only in a state where he was careful to only be eating truma, and so therefore, since I am eating at a higher level of sanctity, his napkin is going to be a suffix for me that it can make me tameh when I eat my kodesh food. And Yochanan ben Gudguda haya ochel al taharas hakodesh kolimav. And there was an individual named Yochanan ben Gudguda who, when he ate his chulin types of food, he always ate at the Tara standard of Kodesh. So that's a pretty high level. So you forget about the Prushim who were just careful to you know, just be matire themselves for Chulin. This Yochanan ben Gudguda, he would always be careful to make sure that he was at the Kodesh level of sanctity, even when he ate Chulin. And even this holy guy, so his napkin would still be considered Tamei through Midras for those who handled Mechatas, such that if you have someone who's handling the chatas water, and he touches the napkin, right, the cloth napkin of Yochanan ben Gudguda, you have to be concerned that maybe you are tummy because of it, and that's the Mishnah essentially spelling out for us that it's not, we're not trying to be discriminatory over here, we're just giving general rules that you are whatever level of sanctity you are used to. You're used to this level of sanctity, you're involved in this area of sanctity, so that's what you're considered to be. Anything higher would have to be concerned around you. Anything lower, we are good to go. So God forbid, again, not discriminating against anyone, we're just saying that this is what it is, even for the holiest of people. Now, the Gemara is going to go further and try and understand a little bit about what was going on over here. The first question of the Gemara is trying to understand this wild idea that when I eat chulin, I have to be concerned that I am in a state of tahara, or at least my hands are in a state of tahara. Who said such a thing? So the Gemara begins, chulin umayser, mi bo netilas adayim. Why in the world do chulin and maaser sheni, why do they need me to wash my hands? In fact, it's such a wild idea to say I have to wash my hands that I'm going to bring a contradiction for this. That the Mishnah, a Mishnah in Bikurim, has the following halacha that it states. It says, Hatruma v'habikurim, that the following laws that we're going to now give over, they apply to both Truma and to Bikurim. Chayavin alein misa, that if I am a non-Kohen, then I would be chayav misa, I'd be liable to death if I consume the truma and bikurim intentionally. In other words, I know that I'm not a kohen, and I know that this is truma, or I know this is bikurim. If I eat them with that full intention and that full understanding, then I'm going to be chayav misa. The chomesh, and if I do it unintentionally, then I have to give an extra, I pay like a fine. Not only do I have to pay the value of the food that I ate, but I also have to pay an extra fifth of its value for as a kind of a penalty. And again, that's for unintentional eating. The aser lizarim, and if you didn't realize this already, the Mishnah emphasizes that it's forbidden to anyone who is not a kohen. The and they are considered like the property of a kohen. The olin be'echad umeya, and when it comes to truma and bikurim, so those of us who know a little bit of the kashrus 101 know the famous idea that if you have chicken soup, you're cooking chicken soup on a Thursday night, a night of Shabbos, and you bring out the cereal and milk because you never had dinner, so you have a quick snack of cereal and milk. You drop a little bit of milk, so we know that it's nullified if a drop of milk goes into the chicken soup. It's nullified 1 in 60. When it comes to Truma and Bikurim, says the Mishnah, it's not 1 in 60 to be nullified, but it's 1 in 100. So, v'olin be'echad umeya, if truma or bikurim is mixed in with like ordinary produce, so then they are going to be considered null and void, meaning I don't have to be so careful that treat everything like truma, as long as it was 100 other non-truma items. So just to say that more simply, let's say you have 100 non-truma, only chulin apples, and you have 1 truma apple. So if you have 1 truma apple that goes into a mixture of 100 other chulin apples, you can't figure out which is which, so they are all identical, so they are all then going to go ahead and be considered chulin apples, and you don't have to be worried that they're all considered truma misafik. break. And to unin netilas yadayim, they also require that I have to do netilas yadayim before I am involved with them. And a person who is a person who was tova themselves, they have to wait until the sun sets before they take them. So in other words, you were tame and now you became tahor, so you have to still wait for sunset to eat them. Hare ilu b'truma u'vikurim. And the Mishnah again emphasizes, this is regarding truma and bikurim. Masha inkin b'meiser. But these things are not true for meiser sheni. V'chol shekin b'chulin. And so too, they're not true for chulin as well. And so therefore, all of that Mishnah was to teach us that if you need to wash your hands for truma, then what the Mishnah is saying is you don't have to wash your hands for chulin or ma'aser sheni. So clearly, our Mishnah is wrong, or it's at least in contradiction with the Mishnah over here. So therefore, kasha ma'aser on ma'aser. So the Gemara says, so we have a conflict of ma'aser on ma'aser, right? Over in our Mishnah that we read at the beginning of the Amud. So there we say that ma'aser sheni, you have to wash your hands. And in the Mishnah, you say ma'aser sheni does not need to wash their hands. And kasha chulin achulin. Again, our Mishnah at the top of the Amud, we said you do have to wash your hands for chulin. And this Mishnah that we just quoted at the beginning of the Gemara says you don't have to wash your hands for chulin. So what's going on over here? Says the Gemara, let's explain this. Bishlama meiser amaiser lo kasha. So we could understand that when it comes to meiser in our Mishnah and meiser in the Mishnah that we just quoted in the Gemara, that there's no contradiction. Why? Because Harabi Meir. Because this Mishnah over here is going to be in accordance with Rabbi Meir, the Harabbanan. Well, that Mishnah is going to be in accordance with the rabbis. What do you mean? Did not, because we have a Mishnah kol aton bias mayim edivrei sofrim. Anything that's going to be required to be tovel in a mikvah for it under a rabbinical law, meaning anything that's tahor from a biblical standpoint, but it's tame from a rabbinic standpoint, metame es hakodesh, will contaminate someone who is considered a kodesh. Sorry, will contaminate a kodesh food. So in other words, let's take a step back for a second. When it comes to the various levels of sanctity of these food items, so the holier it is, the more we are willing to say it becomes tame. So again, the way tuma works is that there's different levels of tuma that can be out there. There's ava tuma, there's a rishon the tuma, there is sheni the tuma, shlishi, etc., etc. So when it comes to truma, for example, so when a truma is at a shlishi, so what that means is that the truma itself cannot be eaten, but it cannot contaminate something else. It can't give over its tuma. When can truma? What is the lowest level that truma can give over its tuma to something else? When a truma is at a rishon latuma, then it can touch another piece of truma and make it a sheni latuma. But once the truma is at a sheni latuma, it can invalidate another piece of truma, but it cannot pass on the ability to pass on the tuma. So therefore, essentially, what the Mishnah is saying, that the Gemara is quoting over here, is that when you have someone who needs to be tovel in a mikvah, midirabana, not midiraisa, so metame is a kodesh, so this person will contaminate a kodesh item, will contaminate a sacrifice by touching it. And uposa as a truma, and he'll even invalidate the truma from being eaten. But when we say posel and not matame, because you invalidate the truma from being eaten, but that truma cannot pass the tuma onto anyone else. Mutar l'chulin u'lemaiser, but is going to be considered a permissible regarding chulin u'lemaiser sheni. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So these are the words of Rabbi Meir. So in other words, there we see that someone who is tami midrabanan, he does not need to wash his hands for chulin. That would be the mission that we just stated in our Gemara. The chachamim usrim b'maiser, but the chachamim say no regarding ma'aser sheni. That regarding ma'aser sheni, you do have to wash your hands. You do have to be machmir for that. So therefore, when it comes to ma'aser sheni, we have in our Mishnah at the beginning of the Amud that says you do need to wash your hands for ma'aser sheni. That's clearly following the rabbis, and the Mishnah that we just quoted in the Gemara that says you don't have to wash your hands for ma'aser sheni. That's clearly like the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Very simple. But ela chulin achulin kasha. But we still have a problem with chulin because everyone seemingly would agree, according to each mishnah, that everyone agrees with them. According to our mishnah at the top of the Amud, it seems like everyone would say you have to wash your hands for chulin. And according to the mishnah that we just quoted, it would seem that everyone agrees that you don't have to wash your hands for chulin. So what is going on over here? Says the gemara, lo kasha, no issue. Why? Kan b'achila and kan b'negia. When our Mishnah tells us that we have to wash our hands for chulin, that means when we eat the chulin, we have to wash our hands. But here, when the Mishnah says you don't have to wash your hands, that's because we're simply touching the chulin. When you touch the chulin, you don't have to wash your hands. When you eat the chulin, you have to wash your hands. So they're not arguing; they're just talking about two totally separate and different cases. That's the Gemara further. Maskev la Rav Ashi Shimi, Maskev la Rav Shimi Bar Ashi. Rav Shimi Bar Ashi says, "What are you talking about? I can lo pligi Rabbanan alei de Rabbi Meir." Up until this point, the rabbis weren't arguing with Rabbi Meir. Ela b'achil de Meiser. It's just that when do the rabbis and Rabbi Meir disagree regarding eating Meiser Sheni, right? So Rabbi Meir says that when it comes to eating Meiser Sheni, you don't have to wash your hands. But the Rabbanan say, you're eating Meiser Sheni, you do have to wash your hands. Aval b'negia de Meiser b'achila de chulin, but when it comes to touching Meiser Sheni, and when it comes to eating, and especially touching the chulin, lo pligi, the rabbis don't argue. So therefore, says Rav Shimi Bar Ashi, that when it comes to eating chulin, even the rabbis say you don't have to wash your hands. So why is our Mishnah ever saying that you have to wash your hands? Because if even when you're eating, according to this understanding, the rabbis say you don't have to wash your hands. So who in the world is the opinion in our Mishnah that says you have to wash your hands when it comes to eating, partaking of chulin? Says the Gemara, ela idi v'idi ba'achila. Rather, both our Mishnah and both our Mishnah and the one we quoted before refers to eating velo kasha, but there's still no problem at all because kan ba'achila dinahama and kan ba'achila depeiri. In our Mishnah that we say you do have to wash your hands, we're talking about bread. Everyone knows you have to wash your hands for bread, and so therefore you do have to wash your hands for chulin. But here, when we say you don't have to wash your hands, it's because we're talking about fruit, we're talking about produce, and there one is not required to wash their hands. Right? Sounds a lot like the world we live in nowadays. That's what we do. Damar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says kol anotel yadav lepeir. Anyone who washes his hands before eating produce other than bread, so harezeh megase haruach, that person's like a bal gaiva. What does he think he is? He thinks he's so fancy he has to wash his hands even before he eats produce? No, you only have to wash your hands before eating bread. So again, the Mishnayos are not contradicting. One is talking about washing your hands before bread, and the other is saying that you don't have to wash your hands before chulin because we're not talking about bread, we're talking about other produce. Okay, with that, what time are we up to? Okay, we'll do a little bit more. So the Gemara is now going to continue in this discussion and shift gears a little bit. Let's see what the Gemara has to say. Tana Rabban, and the Rabbi Tana Braisa, Hanotel Yadav, one who washes his hands, Niskavin, if he has the intention to become Tahor, Yadav Taharos, then his hands are going to be Tahor. But lo Niskavin, if he didn't have the intention for Tahara, Yadav Tameos, then his hands are going to be Tummy. And so too when it comes to someone who is tovel his hands in a mikvah. So this kaving yadav tohoros, if he had the intention that his hands would become tohor, then his hands are tohor. Lo nis kaving yadav tameos, but if he didn't have intention to for his hands to become tohor, then his hands are not tohor, his hands will remain tamei. Says the Gemara, what? The Hatanya, we have a different braisa that seems to argue with this. Bein niskavin, bein lo niskavin, yadav tahoros. Whether he had intention or he didn't have intention, his hands are going to be tahor. If he put his hands in a mikvah, if he washed his hands, what, they're not tahor? Ridiculous. So Amar Rav Nachman says, no, lo kasha. There's no problem over here. Because kan lechulin and kan lemaiser, the top of Yud Tes Amud Aleph. Here, when here we're talking about chulin, and over here we're talking about meiser. So in other words, you need intention to purify your hands for meiser sheni, but you don't need intention to purify your hands for chulin. We're going to assume that if you were tovel your hands, or if you washed your hands even without the intention for tahara, so you could still eat your chulin, whereas if you didn't do it with the intent, Whereas if you didn't do it with the intent, again, if you didn't do it with the intent for chulin, then you're okay. But if you didn't do it with the intent for tahara, for ma'aser sheni, then it is not okay, and you have to go ahead and be tovel again if you're going to have ma'aser sheni. Says the Gemara, trying to find a source for this. Where do we know to say that for chulin, we don't need kavana when we are tovel, our hands, when we wash our hands? Ditnan, because we have Mishnah. Gal shenislash ubo arbayim saw. So this is a fascinating case, right? This is good for us who live in Merrick, because we're talking about a beach. So if you were at a beach and there's a wave coming at you at the beach, and I don't think we have waves this big in Jones Beach or even in Long Beach, but the wave is so big and so massive that what happened was it went up and it detached from the ocean, kind of just like flew in the middle, and it was a massive wave. So gal shenislash ubo arbayim saw. If you have a wave that has 40 sail, which again, that's the amount that you need to water, the amount of water you need in a mikvah. So if you have a wave that detached from the ocean, v'nafal ala adam v'ala kelim, and it fell on a person or it fell on kelim, so then tahorin, both the person and the kelim become tahor. Katane adam dumya de kelim. So the Mishnah therefore is teaching that person is essentially the same as the kelim. What do you mean? Ma kelim de lo mechane, just as you know that the kelim don't have their own kavana, they don't have their own intention. Af adam de lo mechane, so too it's okay for the person not to have any intention, and still the kelim that have no intention, they become tahor. So too the person has no intention, and he can become tahor as well. So therefore, we see from this Mishnah that it's very clear that a person is allowed to be tovel without kavana, and just like the kelim are, and still he's able to be tahor for chulin. So so that's the proof. Umimai, but now says the Gemara, what are you getting all this from? Dilma biyoshiv umitzape imasayi tali shagalas kinan. Maybe we're talking about a case where the person is specifically sitting on the shore. He's right under the wave, and he's waiting for the wave to become detached from the ocean. It's gonna fall on him, and he's saying, okay, and then it's gonna fall on me, and beautiful, I'll be tahor. So he did have intention, and maybe the kelim dumya da adam. Maybe the kelim are just like the person. The ma adam dvar kavana. That just as the person is capable of having such an intention, af kelim d'mechavin lehu. So too regarding the kelim, the Mishnah is specifically talking about a case where the person had intent for him. The guy said, "I am sitting right here because I know with my kelim, because I know the water is going to fall on me and the kelim, and therefore I'll become tor." V'chi tema, and then maybe you want to say biyoshiv. That if the case is where the person is sort of like sitting and waiting for the wave's arrival, Maila Neimra, then what need would the Mishnah be to why would the Mishnah need to specifically say it's halacha? Because this is obvious, right? So in other words, what the Gemara is saying over here, if you really want to tell me that this guy was sitting under the wave with the intention to become tahor by to be hit by the water, so that's just a regular case of toveling in a mikvah. So says Gemara, why would the Mishnah ever need to give such a halacha? So the Gemara explains, no, because salka de techamina. Maybe you would have thought to say ligzor dilma asile mitbal bichar dalis shel geshamim, because maybe you'll say, what does this detached wave look a lot like? It kind of looks like rain, not exactly like rain, but I don't know. You go somewhere during monsoons. Season and it's basically the same. So there's a concern that maybe we should have such a takana that would invalidate a person from becoming tahor in this way from the wave that falls on him, because maybe someone will say, when I go to wherever they have monsoons, India, whatever it is, they're going to experience a monsoon and they're going to say, just like the guy was tahor from sitting under the ocean from the wave, so too I could be tahor from standing under the rain. And so therefore, the Mishnah had to teach the halacha that I am tahor from sitting under the rain. And we don't have to be concerned that there'll be a misconception through that case. Inami, or maybe nigzar Russian atu kevin. Maybe we should have such a takana made because of the concern that. Sorry, yeah, right, right. Nigzor Rashin Atu Kefin Kamash Melanda Lo Gazrina. Right, so maybe we should say, forget about what we just said regarding the monsoon season, but maybe we should be concerned that someone who is Tovel, someone who rather experiences the water falling on him, which the water falling on him, so that's considered like the head of the wave. The head of the wave falls on him, and then there's another part of the wave. There's like the arch of the wave. What's the arch of the wave? The arch of the wave is that curve of the wave, and it's by definition in midair. So maybe, says the Gemara, maybe we would assume that I should, that there is a gezeira that says that I can't allow myself to become tahor if the head of the wave hit me, because I'll assume that I can also, if I want to, just throw up the kelim to begin with, and then the kelim could become purified in the arch of the wave in midair. And so therefore, since I would assume that if I can allow myself to be hit by the wave, and I could become tahor, and therefore I can throw my kelim up, and they could become tahor as well, and we know, we'll see in a second, that we know that the latter case is not allowed, so maybe therefore we should say that even when I'm hit by the head of the wave, that should not be allowed to purify me. So kamash malan de lo gazrinan. So therefore the Tana tells us that we don't make any such decree. So in other words, all of this to tell us that this Mishnah that we quoted, that tells us that me sitting with my kelim proves, and getting hit by a wave proves that I do not need kavana when I to immerse myself for chulin. So says the Gemara, that's ridiculous. It's not talking about that at all. Maybe it's just talking about the case of a person who is sitting there with the kelim, and we're saying that the kelim are just like the person. The person needed kavana, and the kelim need kavana as well. And says the Gemara, umina timra delo matbilin b'chefin. So just parenthetically, since when do we say that you can't be tovel something in midair? Maybe if the wave is in the middle of the air, and I want to throw my fork to be metahirit, throw my fork up into it, well, why can't that work? So who says you can't do a tefillah in the arch of the water in midair? Detanya, because we said in a brisa, matbilin barashin, we can be tovel in the head of a wave. Vein matbilin mekiven, but you can't be tovel in the arch of the wave. Lefisha ain matbilin bavir, because we are not allowed to be tovel in midair. It just doesn't work. It's not right. The Torah talks about a case of being tovel in a mikvah, but not being tovel in midair. You never have such a concept of floating air. So therefore, it doesn't work. And so again, we are the point of the Gemara is that we don't make a gezeira that the wave head that hits you cannot make you tahor, because you're concerned that maybe you would assume that the arch of the wave can make you tahor as well. Rather, we just say there are different cases, that we know that the head of the wave can make me tahor, and the arch of the wave cannot make me tahor. And so ultimately then we're at the point in the Gemara where we're still looking for a proof. Is there a proof that tells us that one really does not need kavana to be tovel in a mikvah, and that even without kavana, that I can still allow to eat my chulin, that it couldn't work for eating chulin. So where is the proof for this? Do we want to stop here? Okay, let's stop here. We'll pick up from this next week. So again, we're at the point, let's remember, we're at the point where the Gemara is trying to now figure out another source to help us understand how we know that a person who is tovel, without any kavana, that we still say he's kosher to eat chulin, that the tahara worked, and that intent was able, that even though he didn't have intent, that he still was able to be considered a good for eating chulin. So that we're looking for a source for that. We'll pick up from here next week. And everyone should have a great night.
Thank you.